Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to At The Movies with me, Umar Pagan and PK Pagan. Ghostbusters, that 80s cult classic directed by Ivan Reitman and starring Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis and Ernie Hudson. It's a schlocky comedy horror masterpiece put on a pedestal by both geeks and film critics. The movie was thrown back into the limelight after news broke that there wouldn't just be an all-female reboot, but in fact a whole new Ghostbusters cinematic universe. Today on the show, Bahir Yusuf and I will be diving deep. We'll be re-looking at the two original movies. We'll be debating the merits of a cinematic universe. We'll be talking about crazy, mean, angry fans, and we'll be reviewing that controversial new reboot. Bahir, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much.
So, before we get into 2016's Ghostbusters, let's take a look back. At 1984 and the original Ghostbusters movie. Ivan Reitman, Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson. It is, for lack of a better word, this fanboy geek masterpiece.
Yes. I mean, what else can you say, really? I mean, Those were the heavy hitters of comedy at the time, right? I mean, when the movie came out, I recently saw that they had wanted other comedy actors of the time, and if those guys were there, it would have just been who else is left? All these comedy greats are in this one film, you know. And I recently watched Ghostbusters 2 again, and it's just great. I mean,
yeah. So Ghostbusters 2 gets a bit of a bad rap. People hate the movie. It came out many years after the original, and they kind of not just think of it as a lesser Ghostbusters, but a Ghostbusters that should have never happened.
Yeah, which I don't understand. I really don't get it. I think, if anything,
and then we're taking off our fanboy lenses here as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I recently watched it again, and I have to say, it's not as bad as everyone makes it out to be.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I mean, for me, a really interesting bit is that the sequel doesn't follow up immediately after Ghostbusters 1, right? The time has passed. The gang has disbanded almost. You know, Venkman's doing like a weird psychologist show on what I can only assume to be local TV, and yet they have to come back together to essentially address this one new big villain, right? Viggo. And it was
Viggo the Carpathian.
Viggo the Carpathian. It was great. I mean, I don't know. I think I really enjoyed it. Yeah, there were bits which were slow, I thought. You kind of got a little distracted a little bit. But generally, throughout, it was a great film.
It's interesting, though, when we're talking about a reboot, for example, for a movie like Ghostbusters. When you look at Ghostbusters on paper, it is a movie that shouldn't work. Even if you think about what that pitch document must have looked like. It is a film that is actually about nothing. It is about a strange paranormal creature called Zool. It is featuring two parapsychologists, is that what they call themselves, or paranormal investigators that assemble a team to fight ghosts. It feels ridiculous. It feels almost like an SNL sketch that has gone on a little too long. And yet, there is something about the movie, whether it is wit, charm, caliber of writing, something about the movie makes it work. It hit all of the right notes, not just for 1984, but even watching it today, the humor holds up. It doesn't feel dated in the least.
I think the other thing that's quite interesting as well is that as I was watching it last night, the realization that the comedy was a lot, well, I will say it's a lot better, you know. And to bring up your point about SNL sketches, the first Blues Brothers, you know, was amazing. And that was essentially based on an SNL sketch. Whether or not this one was off of an idea they had thrown around in the room, I don't know. I'm not sure. But the fact of the matter is, they could take something an idea, a kernel of an idea, so simple and write out this really engaging 90 minutes, it sort of really shows their ability and the writing comedy of the time. When you then follow that up with all the other SNL movies that have come forward since,
There's been a lot of bad SNL films,
right? I mean, Night at the Roxbury's, funny in bits, but that really did not need a whole movie.
But what is it about Ghostbusters? And this is what I've been trying to put my finger on over the last 6 to 8 months, when internet fan rage has been at an all-time high. And we'll get to the reboot in a little while and review what we think about that film. But what is it about the original Ghostbusters that has such appeal? Because it's not just nostalgia. A lot of the time when I revisit some of the movies that have a strong sense of nostalgia, I'm often let down because they're dated. The comedy, for example, doesn't hold up to 2016, and yet Ghostbusters has something about it. And I don't know if it's just that these four people, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Hal Ramis, and Ernie Hudson, have incredible chemistry between them. I don't know if it's just that, but for me, that's what it feels like. This idea that I could watch these four people in any film. It doesn't matter that it was a Ghostbusters movie by some magic kismet, whatever you want to call it. The chemistry between these guys was so good that it worked.
I think those four guys, at the end of the day, carried the film. There were bits of the film where you think that story would have taken over a little bit, but Bill Murray's dry humor and the absolute, I want to use the word, excitedness, keenness of Dan Aykroyd, like when they found out about Sigourney Weaver's baby and they went there to sort of like do these experiments, right?
Oh, in Ghostbusters 2.
In Ghostbusters 2, sorry,
that's right.
And even then, the way it was shot, the way it was directed, yes, they are doing scientific measurements, right? You know, the subject is 29 inches long. You know, you go like, and it's shot exactly the way you would shoot like an alien's sort of experiment sequence. But they're measuring a baby. And the baby's just sitting there going, who are these two adults prodding me, you know? They're doing a tickle test. Yes, we can confirm subject is ticklish. You know, you go like, okay. But it's that deadpan humor almost.
They're taking themselves seriously
in a completely non-serious moment.
Absolutely. You know? I think that's definitely a part of it. Another thing about the original Ghostbusters movie, which I think contributes greatly to its success, it is an incredibly tight movie.
Oh yeah.
The editing on that movie, there is not a single bit of wasted film.
Oh no, you know, absolutely, yeah. And there's no sort of like lull, either in storytelling or in character development.
Oh, every bit serves the story.
Serves the story. It's important. You know, you need to pay attention to this so you can get the next bit. Even if it's not an important bit, at least so then you can get the next bit's comedy. Something is there. You know, and that always works.
And then, of course, there is the Marshmallow Man.
Oh, of course.
The Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. I mean, whatever you say, that is a massive, no pun intended, part of the film. Ghostbusters was the very first movie I watched in cinema, by the way.
Okay.
I think I was 4 or 5 years old and my parents took me to the cinema. My mom took me to watch Ghostbusters.
Right.
Needless to say, that was probably not the wisest parental decision at that age. But, you know, I forgive her. It is something like what I can only imagine people in the 70s got when they watched Star Wars. As a kid, seeing this creature bob up and down past the buildings of New York City and come to life was something completely mind-blowing because it's the kind of things you only see in cartoons.
Yeah.
And to see it in real life, it was both absurd, ludicrous, and yet fit so perfectly within the world that these guys have created.
For me, the two things are important about that. Right? Like the first time you see the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, if I'm not mistaken, it's always shot from the point of view of a person. So even if you see sort of when the head's bobbing over the rooftops, you can almost imagine sitting on a rooftop going, what is that? And then when you see it in full glory, the camera pans from ground level, which is where every human would see it, and sort of look up at it. as opposed to being floaty camera thing, right? Which is what something a lot of people would do nowadays because you want to show the scale and the size of this thing. But he had the director had always put it in context of a person on the ground, literally. The other thing that's quite, I really like about that Stay Puft Marshmallow Man is the fact that what brought it on, right? These four guys are on the rooftop. They would just fire their proton packs, and then I can't remember, one of them shout, "Don't empty your minds. Don't think about anything. Don't think about anything," right? And then the camera cuts to Dan Aykroyd's face going, "Oh, guys, I screwed up."
Then
Bill Murray turns and goes, "What were you thinking about?
What did you do, Ray?"
Yeah.
And what did you do?
It's one of those things where like you're thinking, "Oh my God, was it massive ghost? Oh my God, was it a dinosaur?" No, it's the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. Right?
And then Aykroyd's like, I just couldn't help it. He was so friendly and cuddly. How harmful can the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man be?
And that's the thing, right? And you set it up going, "Oh, this thing is so cute. It's so beautiful. It must be like a really good ghost." And then it just goes, starts crashing things down, you know?
And there is this look of genuine evil,
when he presses
up against the building.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's that setup, right? Like, because everybody's expecting something scary, something freaky, something dangerous, but to come out with something cute and cuddly, but then go, like you said, go pure evil on you, is just a brilliant bit of storytelling and also a brilliant bit of sort of comedy, you know, just that flip of what your expectation is as an audience to then go, "Oh, here's this cute little thing," right?
Which is going to kill you.
And tear the town apart.
"There's something you don't see every day." "Tried to think of the most harmless thing. Something I loved from my childhood. Something that could never, ever possibly destroy us. Mr. Stay Puft."
"Nice thinking, Ray."
"We used to roast Stay Puft marshmallows by the fire at Camp Wakanda."
"Ray has gone bye-bye, Egon. What have you got left?"
"Sorry, Beckman. I'm terrified beyond the capacity for rational thought."
"Puss bucket."
"Nobody steps on a church in my town."
"One, two, three, left."
Ghostbusters 1 and 2 aside, it's been 32 years since the original, and a couple of years ago they announced that they're going to do a reboot. And now, as we all know, we've not lived under a rock,
have not lost consciousness in the last, I don't know, 3 years.
This reboot has been the subject of much controversy. It was directed by Paul Feig, who did Bridesmaids, a brilliant comedy director, and it was announced that it was going to be an all-female reboot. Now, the internet is a horrible, horrible, mean place full of vicious people.
Stay off the internet, kids.
Stay off the internet, kids. Just say no.
Just say no.
That's right. And people have been passing judgment on this movie before it's even been released, before there was even a trailer. The misogynists, the sexists, they may be a vocal minority, but they are indeed a very vocal minority, have flooded the internet and Reddit and Twitter and Facebook with all kinds of hate. So much so that Paul Feig, Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, all of the stars of the movie have almost been forced to come out and address this.
Yeah.
Address a bunch of 16-year-old boys sitting in their underwear on Twitter, right?
Well, or men with mentalities of a 16-year-old.
Yeah, well, that too. That too. Yeah. But have you been able to understand or fathom this rage? Because if anything, Bahir, I think we are fanboys about certain things. And when I say fanboys, I mean we grew up maybe watching movies or reading certain comic books and have developed a certain, I want to say, healthy obsession with these things.
Okay. And I think our parents would disagree, but we're moving along.
Their wallets would disagree, that's for sure.
Wow.
But that being said, I don't think I've ever had that kind of malicious rage towards anything. I dislike the first three Star Wars movies, as in the prequels, with a passion. But at the same point, I don't think it's ever manifested itself in the kind of malicious rage that we see now on the internet. Have you been able to explain that? Because for me, that is just so surreal.
I mean, okay, so I'm going to have to make a confession because I was, in a way, one of those guys.
Ooh.
I was not looking forward to the idea of an all-female cast only because I didn't like the idea of it being a reaction to anything.
You know? So you felt it was gimmicky?
I felt it was gimmicky. I was really concerned that it would be gimmicky. And that is my only concern.
So here's the thing. I don't like those knee-jerk reactions too. Because mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Hollywood is not the place I go to change the world.
Oh, no, yeah.
Or, you know, to fight for women's rights or anything of that sort.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, when they initially announced it, it felt like Hollywood was trying to get some marketing money because they thought that's where the cash is now, right?
Yeah.
That being said, when they announced the cast, Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones,
Kristen Wiig,
Melissa McCarthy, that filled me with a lot of confidence because, yet again, like the original Ghostbusters, these are four of the funniest women in comedy right now.
Yeah. I think to move this conversation along, we have to stop using the term women. I mean, they're the four really funny people.
Well, they're the four funniest comedians in the world today.
Yeah, so I think if we move on from there, and I think that's what a lot of these boys need to do, right? Like, sure, in some ways, my rage was also like, why are they doing a Ghostbusters? Just leave it alone, you know? And in some ways, I'm a bigger fan of the idea of continuing the universe as opposed to starting it over.
I'm with you on that one, especially since the movie's not lost to time.
Yeah, it's not that long ago.
It's only
30 years.
Exactly.
Right? You know, it's you don't have to restart everything every 5 months. Sony Pictures.
Spider-Man,
we're looking at you. You know, so why start over? Why not just continue? And between you, me, and Ian McNally, we had come up with we spitballed good ideas. Well, what we felt was good ideas to continue the story.
Yeah, we're not kidding, folks. This is our lives. We actually are so obsessed with film that we sometimes sit around and talk about, what movies would we make if we had the chance to reboot or redo Ghostbusters?
Well, there's only so many times you can talk about Trump and Hillary Clinton and other politics.
And the downfall of society. Internet, we're looking at you.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I think the initial rage was, why are they rebooting? I think the Ghostbusters idea is a great idea for a universe. But you don't. Why the reboot?
And I think that's the problem I had as well. I think the idea of I don't mind a sequel. I don't mind a Ghostbusters 3.
Yep.
Whether it had all female, all male, all transgender, all of that. It's irrelevant, right?
Yeah.
As long as you write a good movie.
Yes.
On the bright side, though, just to go along the line of diversity and gimmickry, for me, the idea of an all-female Ghostbusters reboot was a good one. I've seen all these photos since of young girls dressed up as Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
I think there is a role there, right? Yeah. When you see someone that looks like you or behaves like you or talks like you on television or in the movies or in books, it does have a positive influence on your self-identity, on yourself, right? And that makes a big difference, I think.
Well, I hope so.
Well, I hope so, right? I was the same. You know, whatever said and done about Rudyard Kipling, he may have been a racist cow. But when I first watched the Jungle Book cartoon, the Disney cartoon, for me, I was looking at it and I was like, hey, there's a brown kid who's like the star of this cartoon.
Yeah.
That guy looks like me.
Yeah.
And that was cool.
And I think the positive aside, I think it is also the idea that these four characters, male, female, whatever color they may be, whatever, you know, associations they may make, they work as a team, and I think that's what's important. The Ghostbusters as an idea, as a story, is about this team coming together when nobody else will believe them, right?
Yeah, they're outcasts from society.
They're literal outcasts from society, you know. Even in the Ghostbusters 2, they had stickers and they had this LED panel on the side of their car that says, "We believe you." When nobody else would, we will. You know, and I think that idea is quite interesting.
And that idea has run through the history of these movies.
Yeah.
Because these outcasts of society would believe you if you said you saw a ghost, because you too are one of those outliers.
Yeah.
And no one's going to believe you that you saw a ghost. But hey, wait, there's this team of guys and they can fight ghosts and they seem somewhat credible and they believe you and they're on your side.
Yes.
And I think that says a lot, not just to what the Ghostbusters means, but to geek culture in general.
Yeah.
And that was for me the biggest, I guess, downside to this whole internet controversy around this Ghostbusters reboot is that, it's a bunch of fans and geeks. If anything, you should be supporting the notion of an all-female reboot or an all-women Ghostbusters team, because they too were the outliers, just like you. And yet you're not able to see beyond this notion that somehow this movie will ruin your childhood. This ridiculous arbitrary statement, which I'm sure I've said a couple of times as well to George Lucas, but not to his face, but I can't wait to actually say it to his face at some point. But anyway, this arbitrary ruining of childhoods, right? Because somehow this movie will negate what happened 30 years ago.
And I think that's an interesting point as well, because I was reading something on the internet that, essentially they were saying like, look, this movie is not going to ruin your childhood. No matter how good or how bad this movie... If this movie tanks, Ghostbusters 1 and 2 is still there. You know, if this movie just sort of bombs in the box offices, they're not going to go back and delete the old ones. Those movies are there, right? So nothing will change the fact that Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ivan Reitman and all those guys made these really great two films in the 80s.
And it's for that reason that I really wanted this 2016 Ghostbusters to be good, to be great. Because, I just wanted to sock it in the face of those haters on the internet.
Right?
And be like, eat it.
Yeah.
Right? These people can make good films.
You're not going to go watch it in the cinema, but you're going to watch it on TV at some point. So eat it.
Ghostbusters.
Oh, conductors in the metaphysical.
Okay, cool. See ya. Hey, guys, which one of these makes me look more like a doctor?
Who is on the phone?
The Stonebrook Theater. There's a goat on the loose.
I'm gonna load up the car.
Whoa. Okay.
Look at this beauty! What did you do to my uncle's house?
I fixed it.
Man, this is so inappropriate for this vehicle.
Oh, we have fun.
Woo!
Let's go.
We've talked about Ghostbusters 1 and 2. We've talked about the internet fan outrage at the idea of an all-female reboot, which brings us finally to the review that you've been waiting for. Should you go out and watch Ghostbusters this weekend? It just released this week. The 2016 reboot, directed by Paul Feig, starring Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, Kate McKinnon, Leslie Jones, and of course Chris Hemsworth
Chris Hemsworth was fine.
As the secretary.
It's fine. Move,
the bimbo secretary,
move
right?
Move along. Okay. We all know.
All right. So what do we think, Bahir? I walked into the cinema going, please be good, please be good, please be good. Please don't suck, please don't suck, please don't suck. I left the cinema going, That was essentially the summary of my reaction to this movie. It was not a great movie. It was not a horrible movie. It just was.
And I think that's fine. I don't think films need to be on either end of the spectrum. I don't think they need to be terrible, or anything that's not terrible is amazing.
And that's exactly what I was thinking about. As I left this film, I realized actually the vast majority of films are just, well, they just are. Mm. They're there. They're entertaining. They may have something of a message. But I think our reaction to this movie has been unduly affected and amplified by everything we've read on the internet. And there's a part of me that wishes I could step back and watch this movie through the eyes of an average person who maybe doesn't follow movie news as much as we do on a daily basis or is not entrenched into geek culture as much as we are. And I would love to know what their reactions are to this film, whether they are seeing it with the same sort of The only word I can think of is indifference. I want to watch it again. I've only seen it once before we've done this review. I want to watch it again because I was also very jet-lagged when I watched the movie, and I want to see it with a fresh pair of eyes.
Literally fresh pair of eyes.
Literally a fresh pair of eyes. But at the same time, you felt somewhat the same way.
I did. I mean, I think on a sort of like...
And just to clarify, you weren't jet-lagged.
I wasn't jet-lagged.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. I was in the country. So I think for anybody who is... who's into films, who goes to watch the movies a lot, who knows of Ghostbusters 1 and 2, I would suspect you'd give this a B rated, you know, a B grading kind of thing, where it's not an average, it's not like middle ground, it's somewhere within the sevens of a 10 scale, right? And I think that's fine. I think that was, and I'm really happy that it's not on the fives or on the fours. It's, for me, it's a good 7. There were bits I laughed at. There were bits I was freaked out at. There were bits I was into. But there were bits also. There were also quite a few bits where I wasn't into. But the movie is worth a watch. If you enjoyed the first two Ghostbusters, if you like film in general, if you like comedies, you know, I say go watch it. I think it's a great film.
Okay, let's break it down. Break it down for people. Let's start with the four women.
The four women, okay.
That's been garnering the most controversy. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
We've said it already. These four are the best comedians in the business at the moment. Paul Feig is an incredibly good director. The comedies that he's made in the past have been fantastic. People have loved them. Bridesmaids especially is still a standout. That being said, the one thing that surprised me in a negative way about this film was the lack of chemistry between the four women on screen. Because off screen, I've seen them do 100 interviews. I've seen them on SNL. They're incredible. And yet between them in this movie, they were standouts by themselves, but they didn't seem to gel together in a way that I thought they would.
Yeah, it didn't seem like... And it could be a story thing. It could be one of those things because they are just coming together as a group of four of them. But again, I'm going to unfortunately compare this to the original Ghostbusters. But you can use them as an example of teams. In the original Ghostbusters, you know that they were all at least thinking on the same wavelength. Whereas here, it doesn't quite feel like it. You know, it doesn't quite feel like they are ready to finish each other's sentences. They're not quite on the same page almost. But you can feel a bit of a chemistry between Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy.
That's there, correct.
That's there. But I think that's any number of things. Off the film, because they worked so much together, so it could have been just, they were actually just close friends. But in the film as well, the two characters had a history, had a past. So the fact that they had some chemistry together worked. But you're right, there's not quite that sort of like team thing yet.
Still, the buddy chemistry isn't there.
Yeah.
And I think it suffers from being a sequel for that reason. You can call it a reboot, but it's still a sequel. And I think people go in to it with a certain amount of expectation. Yet again, I would love to know whether a kid, someone in their 20s who maybe hasn't seen the original Ghostbusters, walking in to watch this movie will feel the same way. We are, for better or for worse, stuck with that comparison of the original, which we cannot escape. It exists. It's out there. I think it's impossible to review this movie in a vacuum, and so we have to keep drawing back to those original films. Yes, but the lack of chemistry aside, I think each individual actor by themselves was exceptional. They are incredibly funny women. Kate McKinnon, I've said this once and I'll say it 100 times, has the best face in comedy, period. Her face... I could stare at that face for 2 hours. Every micro expression is hilarious.
Yeah.
And there is this one scene towards the end where she gets an awesome kick-ass moment. Dr. Gillian Holtzman is her name, and she takes out these ghosts. I mean, just stay tuned for that. That is just fantastic. If you're not pumping your fists in the air at that moment, you have no soul. And that's the thing about this film. Negative criticisms aside, it has these great set pieces. And that's something Paul Feig has done well. The action sequences involving ghosts are partially scary, partially fun, partially action-packed. And when you put all those three bits together, you get quite a complete whole.
And I think that's the other thing as well. I thought the 2016 Ghostbusters was a lot scarier. It leaned horror a lot more. This one is sort of genuinely spooky.
Yeah, it builds up the scares very well.
Yeah. You may not find it scary if you're into horror films, but I'm not into horror at all. But there were bits in this film where it was really freaky, you know, and I liked that they took that up a notch. The animation and the graphics for the ghosts were amazing, were great. The proton beams never looked better. You know, they looked absolutely spot on. And I'm kind of torn between them keeping a lot of the elements from the original Ghostbusters and not redesigning them.
They literally went for a reboot. And there is a post-credit sequence. After all of the credits are over, there is a post-credit sequence that shows you just how much of a reboot they're going for, just how faithful they're staying to the original storyline. And I don't know how I feel about that as yet.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this movie makes enough money that we get to see more movies. I'm, for one, quite excited about the idea of a Ghostbusters cinematic universe.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love these characters, I love the universe, and I want to see more of it. I grew up reading the comics and watching the real Ghostbusters cartoon series as well. And so they're fun people that I want to spend more time with. So a universe is not something that scares me.
And I think if anything deserves a cinematic universe, it would be the Ghostbusters, right? Because the idea of a ghost fighting force, a ghost policing force, I guess, or something, around the US and around the world is a great idea. They should come over to Asia because we've got some stories to tell you.
We got the best ghosts over here, man.
We got the best ghosts. So that I think that idea works. That Florida's got one. That LA will get one.
Ghostbusters International. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, like go CSI on that thing, right? give me Ghostbusters Alaska.
Ooh,
I'd watch that.
Yeah. Bum, bum, bum,
I'd watch that, you know. And I think that's the idea. They should do it.
David Caruso needs a job.
Does he still need a job?
I don't know.
I know Gary Sinise has moved on.
To Criminal Minds.
Criminal Minds now.
It's the same show.
Yeah, come on, man. Anyway, get a better agent.
Anyway, Ghostbusters, though, one problem I did have with the new movie was the comedy. I laughed at bits, and I'll tell you the problem I had. The issue I had was, okay, I don't know if this is an issue, but this is a comparative issue. 2016 comedy is very different from 1984 comedy.
Oh, yeah, really,
right?
Different.
In that the movie was written to appeal to a bridesmaids/hangover audience.
Yeah.
So there was a lot more slapstick. There was a lot more sexual innuendo. And then don't get me wrong, there's a lot of sexual innuendo in the first movie, but it wasn't set up punchline. It felt a lot more like a flow of conversation. And the thing which rubbed me up a little bit the wrong way with this film was the fact that it was really set up punchline for the jokes. And I saw them coming, And when I rewatched Ghostbusters 1 and 2, I found myself laughing at inopportune bits because the comedy was well tersirat. It was well hidden.
I think that's the other thing as well. How in this day and age where these kinds of things would get overanalyzed and would get researched and would get sort of like double checked against three interviews and stuff like that, at the time we don't know how much of the script was ad-libbed, you know, because a lot of it felt like ad-libs, right? A lot of Bill Murray's sort of like jump ins, his witty sort of asides, just felt completely
improvised,
you know? And I think that is the question I would ask. How much of that, of the first two Ghostbusters, was improvised? Because you had people like Dan Aykroyd, you had Bill Murray. Come on, the king of sort of the one-liner, the deadpan humor, witty humor, Bill Murray. And now, when you don't know if those bits were scripted, and I suspect they were, because like you said, they were punchline set up, right?
And that's the thing, because I've seen, and you've seen, Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig improvise, Kate McKinnon improvise. It feels to me that they were held back in this film. I would have loved to see them just let rip.
Yeah.
Like we've seen in all of those other movies that they're in the post-credit sequences, what they can do and are capable of.
Yeah, how they just take it too far.
Oh, so good. Yeah. And that was the thing. The comedy in this movie felt restrained. It felt too written.
I will say though, and this sort of might get into a lot of people's goats, but like I thought this was my favorite Melissa McCarthy film, in the sense that I liked her character in this one. She didn't feel like she was playing a character. She didn't feel like she was sort of over the top.
Melissa McCarthy plays the same character in a lot of her
comedies. Right? And I think this one, it actually feels like she's acting. She's making decisions. She's holding herself back because then she can let go at some point, you know. And I think it's quite interesting that she isn't the over the top one. Kate McKinnon's there, and I think you have the loud one as well in Leslie Jones, right? So you've got those two are carrying those bits, so Melissa McCarthy doesn't have to do it. So you can believably see her as someone who has researched, who has read papers, who has written books, you know. So you can't just throw her off, right? When I first saw that image of Kristen Wiig in the super uptight professor wardrobe that she was wearing, I was a bit concerned because I was going, oh man, is this going to be another Kristen Wiig's the uptight one and Melissa McCarthy's the really loud, over the top one? But it's not, you know. Kristen Wiig sort of is very more academia, and you can see that. And Melissa McCarthy's more sort of get down to the field and get dirty kind of scientist, you know. And you can see that, and I like that about that. So there was that sort of distinction. It was a distinction from other Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig characters and films.
It's Egon versus Ray.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right? Essentially.
I don't think this is a movie that's going to garner the same kind of cult status. Even 5-10 years from now, I don't think 2016's Ghostbusters is going to be that movie that people revisit and go, actually, we were mistaken. I think this is a fun, average summer film. It's not going to create any new fans, and I don't think it's going to break any hearts either.
Yeah, I don't think it being an average summer blockbuster comedy action thing is a bad thing. I think it's fine. I think you should go watch it.
I think we're expecting too much. I think you know why we're expecting too much? We're expecting too much because we're so invested in this idea that we want this all-female Ghostbusters reboot to work. Because if it doesn't, you know there are going to be 100 idiots out there who write articles going, see, women can't lead summer blockbusters. And that's what we don't like.
Yeah, we don't like that.
And that just kills you. So at the same time, I want this movie to make a lot of money.
Yes.
But I did walk out of that cinema going, yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
I would recommend you go and watch it because I still had a good time.
Yeah.
But I cannot approach this movie in a silo. I cannot review this movie in a vacuum. And when I compare it to a movie that was made 32 years ago, it doesn't hold up in the face of that.
Yeah.
Before we go, though, we have to talk about the cameos.
Oh, great cameos.
Very, very quickly.
Yeah.
All of the original cast have cameos in this film, except Harold Ramis, who passed away.
Yes.
Well, Well, if for those eagle-eyed observers, you might notice something.
Yeah.
but yes, yeah, so let's rank the cameos. I'm going to say Dan Aykroyd's cameo was probably the best.
Yep, I agree.
Followed by Sigourney Weaver.
Okay.
Followed by Bill Murray and then Ernie Hudson, who probably has the shortest cameo.
Ernie Hudson has the shortest cameo, yeah.
But it was nice to see them. They don't play themselves. They don't play their characters from the original because this is a reboot. Yep. And Venkman, Ray, Egon,
they don't exist.
They don't exist in this multiverse, universe, right? So, yeah, a very, very funny cameo. So I look out for those, and I don't think.
Well, for most of them, you can't miss.
Well, no, you can't, actually. You can't. I say look out for them. They're right there in your face.
They're not something you have to look for.
I whooped a lot.
Yeah, we whooped a lot. Yeah,
when those happened.
Yeah.
You know, on this show, I never say, it's very rare that I say don't go watch a movie because we want you to watch these movies and we want you to talk to us about them. So go watch Ghostbusters. I would say that this is, like Bahir said earlier, a 6 to 7 out of a 10 film. It's still above average. Go watch this movie and talk to us about it. I'm on at Uma Pagan and on at the movies MY. Bahir, you're on?
I'm on Twitter at Bahir Y.
That's right. Tweet us. You can Facebook me on the At the Movies page. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. There are all these avenues in which you can talk to us. So go watch Ghostbusters today. Go watch it this weekend. Let us know what you think. We really want to know. You've been listening to At the Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.